And Simbad just, you know, had a momentarily had a smile on his face, presenting his obvious triumph to the surrounding crowd. Simbad was not seeing what is coming. At this moment, his face changed. It was clear to him that disaster had struck.
You are listening to KasparovChess.com podcast, episode 11.
In the fall of 1976, I was busy working on my openings. Nikitin wanted me to expand my repertoire by including first d4. I already played first knight f3 a few times, but Nikitin wanted me to concentrate on classical openings with first d4 because he believed that it would not only help me to increase my knowledge of different kind of middle game positions, but also will make more difficult for my opponents to prepare for the game against. I was already quite well known, and my opponents had access to my games, and playing both e4 and d4 could complicate their opening preparation. As he used to say, that it would be very important for me to learn how to serve by both hands. With black pieces, I followed Alexander Shakarov, who has been very active playing Karakhan defense, mostly in his corresponding chess, and had very long and deep analysis of some of the key positions where he found refutations of official theory. I remember that the members of Azerbaijan junior team, and some of even adult players, joined this analysis by moving pieces around because it was quite fascinating to look for improvements at move 20 or so, and having confirmation that the official recommendations in the books, they could be not only challenged, but totally refuted. Nikitin, though, was not so enthusiastic about Karakhan. He was always devoted to Sicilian, especially Scaveningen Sicilian. He wrote even a book about it, and that was his favorite opening. And I also have to say that my first coach, Oleg Privorotsky, was also a Scaveningen player, and it's not surprising that I have been addicted to Scaveningen throughout my entire chess career. And the decisive game in 1985 against Anatoly Karpov, game 24, that brought me the world championship title, was played in Scaveningen. And even the last win in the professional chess career in Linares against Mickey Adams was also Scaveningen. Very sharp line with opposite side castles. As for practical chess, there were only team events. We had another attempt to qualify for Pioneers versus Grandmasters tournament. This time we played in Baku. And while we qualified in 1974 by beating Kiev, team in Kiev, and in 1975, beating the Tbilisi team in Tbilisi, surprisingly, we failed to qualify in Baku. I did well, scoring 6.5 out of 7 at board one, but somehow we ended up second, trailing 0.5 point from a team that I guess probably was not as good as ours, but this time we were not lucky. But at the same time, I was not too upset because I already thought I could take on grandmasters, if not one-on-one, but not necessarily in the simultaneous exhibition. Oleg Romanishin, who was visiting this tournament, he played an exhibition match with, I don't remember, 15 or so players. I was one of them, and I guess Romanishin was very upset seeing me because he remembered our work, a few hours of work in Lviv previous summer when Viktor Kart brought him and Belyavsky and a few others to help me preparing for World Championship under 16 in France. And Romanishin knew exactly how strong I was, and he definitely was upset seeing me there, and not surprisingly so, I crushed him quite handily. And now I think it was not fair for me even to accept this invitation by local organizers. But I couldn't say no, it was played in Baku in Pioneer Palace. So we couldn't qualify, but my mind was somewhere else because I had to defend my title, the Soviet Junior Under 18. Very few people believed that I would be able to repeat the success in Tbilisi. But before that, we had two more team events, one in Tbilisi, one in Yerevan. Both included our competitors from Armenia and Georgia. The event in Tbilisi was an official Trans-Caucasian championship, while in Yerevan it was more of a friendly event, double round. And in Yerevan, actually, I already tried my first D4 against Stur and Yelan. And I was quite pleased with the outcome. But the game I want to include in this episode took place in Tbilisi. And my opponent was Sumbat Lputyan, who definitely wanted to take revenge for his painful defeat in Tbilisi earlier this year, in January, when I beat him in round 4 of Soviet Junior Championship under 18. We played King's Indian, and Sumbat had a relatively new idea against a very popular line in Zenish with knight c6 and a6. I have to say that at that time, I played exclusively knight c6 line against all different setups that white could employ in King's Indian, whether it was g3 bishop d2, g2, or Samish, or classical with knight f3 bishop e2. And Sumbat's idea was to delay the development of knight on g1, waiting for me to play e5, d5, knight d4, and then attacking knight on d4 without wasting time, because in many theoretical lines, white goes knight e2, g2, then knight c1, and then after e5, d5, knight d4, white knight has to attack the black centralized knight either from b3 or e2. Sumbat had an idea of saving time and gaining space on the queen side. So he played rook b1 on b4, and I had to think about it because it was quite an unpleasant plan. I already knew about positional dangers that black could expect if they play without caution. I lost badly against Magyaramov a year before, playing b5 too early. And after cb5, d5, and white knight goes on d4, so it was really bad. But then I spent 25 minutes and I found a very interesting combination. So just it's a pawn sacrifice. And I nearly saw the whole line. So hard to believe now, but I remember that, you know, I was quite intrigued and I just couldn't resist this temptation. So I played e5 and then just, you know, sacrificed the pawn. And then at move 14, I saw c5, and I saw that c5 could lead to the end game, where just, you know, black probably could save the game. But I found something else, you know. I found an idea that, if worked, you know, it could be a brilliant game, because the combination was quite unexpected, and I could sense that Sinbad was not seeing what is coming.
So his move 15 bishop e2 proved that he was not aware of the real danger. He played fairly quickly, and he was quite confident. He saw c5. He saw this idea, but he believed that it would be refuted most convincingly. So it all happened very quickly, I remember. I played c5, he took there, I took on e4, spending just a minute or so. Yeah, and Sinbad took, and then played g3, also fairly quickly, and he was very confident. He could show this confidence. Though bishop f2 at move 18 was the last chance to save the game. So after I took on b1 with check, he immediately played king f2, and after making this move, Sinbad was about to stand up from the board, demonstrating to the players who were there just watching the game, because it was so quick and they saw that pieces were hanging, and Sinbad just, you know, had a momentarily had a smile on his face by just, you know, presenting his obvious triumph to the surrounding crowd. But I didn't give him a chance to enjoy it for too long, so I immediately made my move rook b2, moved a square, moved a rook for one square, and it was crushing. And when my rook moved this one square from b1 to b2, Sinbad, who was always calm and normally imperturbable, at this moment, his face changed. It was clear to him that disaster had struck. Nevertheless, Sinbad found the best chance involving an exchange sacrifice. And while I thought the game was over, I still had to demonstrate my endgame technique. So we made other few moves fairly quickly, and after 23 king d3, I recognized that I must take on c3, returning an exchange.
But though White managed to avoid immediate disaster and even to restore material balance, his position was lost due to pawn weaknesses. And I played this endgame with great precision, equal to my creativity at the opening stage of the game. At one point, Sinbad was under illusion he could create counterplay on the queen side, but I calculated it very precisely that my f pawn would be more dangerous. And after being forced to give up his bishop for this pawn, Sinbad resigned. This game undoubtedly boosted my confidence before next junior championship in Riga in January 1977. Though there was one minor but unpleasant upset in Yerevan, where I lost my micromatch against Zurab Stura, so one draw, one loss. And Stura definitely took this victory as a good sign for upcoming championship in Riga. And many thought that he would be again competing for the title with me and other strong players like Artur Yusupov, Sasha Chernin, or two Latvian top players, Edvin Kengis and Zigurd Lanka. But what's happened in Riga in January 1977 was impossible to predict.